Hello, friends, and we are beginning to work again with Rays and Initiations webinar commentary, and this is number 81 in our series. We've been discussing the fourth ray and the unfortunate decisions which occurred in Atlantis when, quote, the leaders of men under the influence of this paramount fourth ray energy, because it was, after all, the ray of humanity and the ray of the fourth root race, made a decision which laid the emphasis upon the matter aspect according to their desire, their personal desire, and their emotional reaction, which is present in the essential duality of manifestation. And thus, they inaugurated the age of materialism, which apparently had not existed in such a form before that deliberate choice. And in a way, they were aligning themselves with the Lords of Form. This age has wrought itself out through its accompanying, and note these words, greeds, hate, separativeness, and aggression. This is what has characterized even the modern era. During the present century, this materialism, and that's the 20th century, led to the World War, which was in reality the expression of a shifting orientation, and therefore, to a certain extent, the triumph of good, because the good was emerging, and so the only way to stop it, we might say, was to raise up the powers which advocated for the form and not for the new possibilities. So we understand that something, as DK has told us about the inevitability of the Second World War, the Great War from Ray, from the 1914 until 1945, and it might have been fought out on the psychological level, but apparently the human race was not ready for that, and moreover, the disciples of the period had not worked hard enough to retain the battle upon the mental plane. So, you know, I always try to do just a little review for a segue into what we are now discussing, beginning on page 6. The balance is slowly swinging over to the side of the spirit aspect of duality. So, you know, despite appearances, this is good news. It has not yet swung, even in intention, completely over, but the issues are becoming increasingly clearer in men's minds. I come to bring not peace, but the sword. Sword of discrimination, said the Christ. I come to bring not peace, but the sword, we might say, of discrimination. And the indications are that men will eventually decide correctly. Libra is becoming more powerful in the planetary horoscope, we are told. Libra now becoming BBCG. More powerful in the planetary horoscope. With that, man will eventually decide correctly, will attain a point of balance or equilibrium under Libra and with the help of the fourth ray, which we should say, the help of the fourth ray, and will finally throw the weight of public opinion on the side of spiritual values. Right now, there is so much economic concern and fear. Fear rules at this time. And whatever seems protective is espoused. Thus, leading to a collective renunciation of materialism, particularly in its grosser and physical forms. Now, will this happen under the very physical planet Vulcan? Will it finally happen in the Aquarian Age? That is a question, because the time scale that DK is using is not known to us. Will this happen in the age of Aquarius? That is a question. We hope so much for that particular age, what may be accomplished during it, but we know 2,000 years is in some ways a short time. And then, you know, we head into the age of Capricorn, and if materialism would rule, that would be the densest possible type of materialism, and would crystallize the forms in which the soul attempted to express. So we don't know, but we anticipate that at the end of the Aquarian Age, the age of the period of brotherly love will supervene under the example of the Christ, and under the control of the planet Venus, which rules the last 720 years or last decanate of Aquarius. So much illumination in the central decanate, much brotherly love and realization of unity in the third decanate, and in the first decanate, into which we are shortly entering, one can already feel it, much difficulty under Saturn, as DK tells us. The time is not yet, but a great awakening is in process. Men, however, will only see correctly when this principle of conflict is properly evaluated and is, as a spiritual necessity, we might say, for the clarification of the opposites, and is used by humanity as an instrument to bring about emergence from the wrong controls and principles. So from conflict comes possible harmony and a greater unity among human beings. Just as the individual disciple uses it, the fourth ray, that's what we're doing here, we're studying the rays, right, to emerge out of the control of matter in the three worlds, we might say, because the fourth world is the world of Buddhi, and is in the cosmic ethers. So, you know, and here is, let's see if I can get this correct. Maybe I have to. It's going to come this way. Yeah, the discrimination factor is here. Discrimination ruling the fourth subplane, discrimination between the soul and personality, and thus the chance to emerge at least out of the lower 18 subplanes. When there is a conflict of this nature, one side must win, even if temporarily, and if the higher side wins, it can take into its purview some of the values that the lower side presented. I'm reminded a little bit of Alexander the Great, who once he was a very fourth-ray individual, and first-ray and fourth-ray, and once he conquered Persia, he began to adopt the Persian dress and manner and way of doing things as if to subsume under his new victory the ways of the group that he had defeated, and actually considered them a lesser civilization in a way than the Greek civilization. But he subsumed them. He brought them in. He tried to create harmony with them. So just as the individual disciple uses it, the fourth ray, to emerge out of the control of matter in the three worlds, namely the lower 18 subplanes, as usually considered, beginning with the emergence from the control of the physical body, which is, in a way, the fourth, because we have the dense physical body, the etheric body, the astral body and the lower mental body. So counting from the lower mental body, interestingly enough, there's a lot of physicality connected with the number four. So this is one of the very first emergences, emergence from the physical body is one of the very, first emergences. And it is occurring particularly, finally, at the time of the first initiation. Then passing out of the control of the emotional nature, we might say, after many conflicts, because the idea is to harmonize. New keyboard, I'm afraid, is to harmonize the field in which conflict had just been occurring. Okay. And then formulating for himself a spiritual ideology which enables him to pass out of the control of the three worlds of form, leaving behind any slavery to ordinary concrete mind. CMD, I'm going to make that concrete mind dead. CMD. Okay. Concrete minded. Leaving behind any concrete minded control. So, let's see if I have that correctly. Haste makes waste. CMD, and I don't have it correctly. So, concrete minded. And that is not a easy thing to escape, as we realize in this Aryan age when the concrete mind is so emphasized, it does become the slayer of the real. It does blind us to the subtler things until the fifth ray is used in a higher way. So there will be, using the fourth ray, the passing out of the control of these lower elementals, and so begin to function as a soul infused personality. The elementals no longer control so completely. So mankind also has to do the same in mass formation. Obviously, the individuals are closer to this than humanity as a whole. And let's make that OBVL. Okay, obviously. All right. So now on page 607, this whole process culminates when the fourth initiation, known in the East particularly as the Great Renunciation and in the West as the Crucifixion, is taken by man today and by humanity in some distant future. It's a question of whether it will be in this particular round or the next or even in this particular chain, but I suspect so, because it is the humanity related to this particular chain. Humanity in some distant future. This point of emergence is reached by right decision and as a result of the right use of the principle of conflict. So what we're doing here is we're considering, we consider the fourth initiation as a point of emergence and right decision and the right use of the principle of conflict brings us to the possibility of the fourth initiation. Well, you know, none of us is there yet, but at least we can learn about it, and we have the great example of the Master Jesus or the initiate Jesus at that time, having passed out of the, well, not exactly out of the human kingdom, but certainly into a new relationship with the will and with the monad, and thus with Shambhala at that time, and becoming a still truer member of the spiritual hierarchy through the great relinquishment through which he passed and through which others have passed as well. I mean, there's the hint, you know, as I've sometimes spoken, that Father Damien, whose task was to bring some kind of humane relief to the lepers of Molokai Island in Hawaii, where they were isolated, that he too was really an initiate of the fourth degree. When you kind of look at his, as a younger man, at the intensity of his eyes, you see something very, very unusual. It will be obvious to you that this principle of conflict is closely related to death. Okay, well, there has to be, you know, emergence of the incarnated soul out of the form, and a great struggle. The death throes are a great struggle. By death, I mean extraction from form conditions, physical, emotional, or mental. This is very important, you know, what he's trying to say here, and for us to come into a new and deeper understanding of what death really is. We usually just think of it as the cessation of life of the physical body, but there are all of these deaths, which are, in a way, liberations, and which involve what D.K. calls, in a mysterious phrase, the eternally lovely secret of death. By death, I mean extraction from form conditions, physical, emotional, or mental. I mean cessation of contact, temporarily or permanently, with physical form, with astral glamour, and with mental illusion. You know, let's see, this is pretty much death as an emergence out of limitation. I mean the rejection of Maya, the name of that all-inclusive effect which overwhelms a man who is immersed in materialism of any kind. Well, you know, the universe is material. And when the universe returns to the ray of the absolute, that is a universal death. And let's bring that in. I think this is the way to do it. Ray of the absolute. Okay. That is that mysterious flashing forth from apparent nothingness that starts a universe. So the rejection of Maya, so let's just say the ninth initiation brings a kind of death with respect to the cosmic physical plane. Now, of course, the interesting thing is that there may be a refusal to have anything to do anymore with the cosmic physical plane, and that happens at the ninth degree, but then because of training elsewhere and compassion and participation in a larger system, there may be a return in service later to the cosmic physical plane. We can expect that, assess that the solar angels ventured onto the cosmic astral plane to take the path to Sirius, but have since fallen again for service purposes into the cosmic physical plane, and even lower into the dense physical body of the solar logos. At least a ray of their solar angelic being went forth into that very low level, cosmically considered. So I mean the rejection of Maya, the name of that all-inclusive effect which overwhelms a man who is immersed in materialism of any kind. Now, so remember that our gross materialism, that's gross. Materialism is not the only kind of materialism, and is therefore overcome from the soul angle by life in the three worlds. You might say that in the biblical story, Jonah is swallowed by the whale. The whale of great size, representing illusion or Maya, generally considered. Okay, so let's get a good old representing in there. And I didn't realize how many abbreviations I had in my previous cache of abbreviations. It is the principle of conflict latent in every atom of substance, which produces, first of all, conflict, then renunciation, and finally emancipation. So we can understand how that works, a struggle with the medium from which one must become free, then a repudiation or renunciation of that medium, that trap, that environment, and freedom then from it. So, you know, let's just say principle of conflict. The principle of conflict leads to right adjustment. We have to struggle with those forms and energies which are on our own level and slightly higher or lower to know exactly where we stand. So POC, I think I'm going to call this the POC, and that will be called the principle of conflict. All right. Now, it is this principle of conflict which produces war in some form or another, then rejection, and finally liberation. It's always leading to liberation. We have to remember, and I'll get that in here, no, that's not what I want. Excuse me. Remember what a liberation the fourth initiation represents. A tremendous liberation from the dense physical body, not just of the planetary logos, but of the solar logos. The, you know, and physical bodies are just not principles, so from the cosmic perspective, as we are eventually cosmic beings, and we'll take what for us is even a first cosmic initiation at the fifth degree, we are sadly curtailed in the dense physical body of the solar logos, which includes our causal body, from which relief must be achieved eventually through its rightful destruction. This principle is, as you can well see, closely related to the law of karma and the fourth cosmic law is the intermediary law of karma. And LOK would be a good way to represent that as the law of karma. So, you know, there in all karmic interaction, there are many adjustments which must lead to harmony. So I'll put that down. In all karmic interaction, many are the conflictual adjustments, which lead eventually to harmonization. Because karma, though using strongly calculative mathematical third-ray methods and harsh first-ray methods, is really a process of balance and adjustment under the fourth ray, leading to the principle of love and unity and right relationships under the second ray. Those rays are involved, all the rays are involved, of course, but there are different ways of viewing this law of karma. So often we view it from the angle of pain, but eventually we are looking at something that brings all factors within our environment into right relationship. So this principle, as you can well see, is closely linked to the law of karma. It is to this principle that Mrs. Besant referred when she speaks in one of her books of the fact that the substance whereof all forms are made is already, from the very dawn of the creative process, tinged with karma. Well, this is true of our solar system because of the previous, okay, that's a good one. And if I can, P-R-E-V, because of the previous incarnations of the solar logos. There is deep occult significance to the thought, often voiced, that death is the great liberator. You know, he would not speak of the eternally lovely secret of death were it not so. It means that the principle of conflict has succeeded in bringing about conditions wherein the spirit aspect is released, temporarily or permanently, from imprisonment in some kind of form life, either individual or group. We might say that the release from the, from the physical body at the fourth degree is permanent. And although we may generate a kind of Maya Virupa, permanent, from the fourth degree on, we are not held by that Maya Virupa, that dense physical body, but can come and go as we wish. We have control over matter and form, at least of a certain kind. Okay. Now, let us go on. You will all, as disciples and aspirants, who else would bother to read this book, really, if you think of it, be able to interpret the working of this principle as you watch the effect in your own lives of the action of the strains and stresses. Now, all of these are fourth ray effects. Strains and stresses, you know, the fourth ray can wear a person out pretty rapidly. We've seen the effect in the lives of some artists and musicians, how much pressure, strain, and stress they subject themselves to, and how the physical vehicle wears out early in the game. So we look at the effect of the strains and stresses, the points of crisis or of tension which the conflict between soul and personality produces. This is a vertically oriented conflict. Vertically, yes. There are stresses and strains on the horizontal level, but when we deal with the soul and personality, we're dealing with the stresses and strains which have to do with that which is higher and that which is lower. And, of course, eventually the higher, hierarchically, must overcome the lower. Conflict is always present prior to renunciation. Now, this I'm sure we have experienced, you know, even in our ordinary human circumstances. You're making a difficult decision. You know it's going to require giving something up, and the different demands of the two sides present themselves, and one struggles with those demands, with those incentives, with the orientation of desire, whether lower or higher. Conflict is present prior to renunciation, and it is only at this fourth great spiritual crisis, note, initiation, deemed as crisis, that conflict as we understand it, now there's that qualifying word, that qualifying phrase, ends. Conflict as we understand it between the soul nature and the elemental nature. In the realms of formless living, the cosmic etheric planes, wherein the hierarchy lives and moves and has its being, conflict which has developed in man the sense of discriminative choice is superseded by crises of decision. This seems an important sentence. Conflict which has developed in man the sense of discriminative choice is superseded by crises of decision. You know, these are, man knows what is valuable and has to make the right choice regarding direction in line with his monad. So, little phrases can help in line with. Okay. Not decision based upon discriminative perception between right and wrong, or between spirituality and materialism. These he knows. But crises of decision based upon perception of the plan, participation in the purpose, and the prevention of evil. In other words, such a being, a higher initiate, initiate knows what is good or evil, but he tries to make the best choice to advance the divine plan. Now, if we are looking for an example of a crisis of decision, we find them at the point of the great decision as the sixth initiation is being taken. Now, one of the great examples is the choice that the Buddha made, and Master DK calls it a very understandable choice, to remain with humanity as a supervisor, I suppose, from Shambhala, rather than go on the path, one of the seven paths, I guess, at that time, which was really his path to take. This was a crisis, and the choice, we learn, was not a correct one, but the Tibetan tells us that the Buddha has since, of course, expiated this very understandable choice because of his great compassion for humanity. And think about compassion. Here's a second-ray soul, the Buddha, but he has a third-ray monad. But still, the compassion is great. And he stayed with humanity. Who knows what the effects were of this choice to remain. Well, we are all going to be confronted with choices at the sixth degree, and there's really only one proper choice that we can make. Will it be the correct one? And we will have to see about that when the time comes, and it's not imminent. I would have you ponder on these three phrases which distinguish the crisis of decision. the crises of decision which confront the master after the fourth initiation and which take place, take the place of the crisis of discrimination, which precedes that stage. In other words, we know what is right, we know what is good, but what is totally correct and proper, you know? What choice is totally correct and proper in line with the divine plan as understood by the high initiate? So what are these three? Perception of the plan. Now, this can take place if one is a custodian of the plan, maybe at the fourth degree, but certainly at the fifth. Participation in the purpose, and this requires monadic identification. This requires mastership, mostly. After the fourth degree, one is heading towards mastership. And this is a factor related to the atmic plane. Okay, and prevention of evil, this is a shambolic duty and relates to the lives within Shambhala. So these are the decisions. Decisions around these three activities involve the initiate who has taken the fourth degree. Okay, these decisions are based, first of all, on goodwill to all forms in the three worlds. You know, the love has been achieved, the heart has been crucified and opened at the fourth degree. So there is a general expression of a liberated love from the Buddhic plane, And secondly, upon the will to good, which is the higher expression of goodwill, which impulses the and implements the three creative and manifesting aspects of divinity. So, movement from goodwill to the will to good. You see how the abbreviations do help at a certain point if we can suffer through their collection, you might say. These are deep things whereof we speak. You know, beyond us really, but we have to have that vision, the quality of the hidden vision, so that we speed ourselves forward towards objectives which might never be in our mind at all if we were not given this excellent comprehensive teaching. These are deep things wherever I speak. It is wise to remember that all crises in the material world, individual crises and those related to humanity as a whole, are governed by the principle of conflict. I suppose must lead to harmony. Whilst crises in the spiritual world are controlled by the principle of decision. Oh, this is a wonderful distinction, you might say. And let's sort of enlarge the print here a bit and give it the old, let's see, what have we got here? 22 font. So we'll do that. And repeat. It is wise to remember that all crises in the material world and those related to humanity as a whole, which still functions in the material world, are governed by the principle of conflict, whilst crises in the spiritual world are controlled by the esoteric principle of decision. Note how he puts the qualifier in there, the word esoteric, because he doesn't want to confuse the normal decisions of the lower worlds with the kind of decision that has to be made when a person will choose only the good, yes, but must attempt to choose what is the best and what is intended by the divine will as it works through his monad. One must choose what is intended by the divine will as expressed through oneself as a monad. So the principle of conflict. Oh, that must be a real haste makes waste POC. Look at that. Principle of conflict must be in my life quite a bit. Otherwise, I wouldn't be coming back to it all the time here. Principle of conflict and principle and the POD, path of discipleship, no. principle of decision. So PODC. PODC. And we'll call this the principle of decision. Well, I think we are still subjected so far to many conflicts, and we have not entered these higher worlds where great opportunities seem to unfold before us. And it's a question of retracing our steps as an emanated monad along a path of return, the path of return, which is correct for us. This must require tremendous discrimination and self-knowledge, knowledge of oneself at the root, and probably increasing knowledge of the way that one has descended into limitation. The entire descent into limitation will probably not be vouchsafed at that moment, but certain steps which indicate the path by which we have descended into what we can call monadic extension. And I'm considering the monad a much bigger thing than the human monad at this point. The principle of conflict is the prime factor lying behind the evolution of form as the field of experience for the soul in the four kingdoms in nature. You know, this is a bit of a getting the best possible form out of inevitable conflict. Okay. The human and the three subhuman. So there is this, it's a constant battle, and out of it comes a superior form. Constant battle between forms, and from this battle emerges the best possible form under the circumstances. It is based on the intellectual factor of discrimination, which is inherent in the smallest atom of substance and which reaches its fullest expression in advanced humanity. In other words, there is a way of approximating the intended archetype that's found in the world of purpose, the world of being. And all of this conflict leads to, all this inevitable conflict leads to archetypal approximation. We are to approximate the forms that are found high in the world of purpose, so that that which is found in the world of becoming reflects as accurately as possible the beauty and purposefulness of the world of being. The indications that it has achieved its purpose as far as humanity is concerned are to be found in the passing through the initiation of renunciation. So there is the alignment with monad and with purpose and with an archetypal form for the individual. So let's look at that again. This is the principle of conflict that's lying behind the evolution of form. And the form constantly evolves. It's based on the intellectual factor of discrimination. In other words, with what shall we ally and what shall we reject? Okay, so with what shall we ally and what shall we reject? Because there's going to be a fusion process, a joining process, an amalgamation process, but if the lower combinations in the world of becoming are to reflect the archetype, then this discriminative factor must be at work, because we cannot ally with all forms. There are correct forms with which to ally and thus produce an accurate reflection in the world of becoming of the purposeful archetypal world of being. So every atom of substance has this and begins to choose its affiliates. thus we choose our affiliates. Okay. Which is inherent in the smallest, etc. And it reaches its fullest expression in advanced humanity. The indication that this principle, that it, and let's call it the principle of conflict, has achieved its purpose as far as humanity is concerned, is to be found in the passing through the initiation of renunciation, at which time we have no more adhesions which prevent congruence with the divine purpose. The principle of decision, now this is, you know, so let's outline this, you know, and make it a little bigger so we know what we're talking about here. And now we have down here, the principle of decision. And, you know, it looks like it controls more of the master's work than even the initiate of the fourth degree. But he's on his way to becoming the master, of course. The principle of decision, which controls the master, governs his work within the hierarchy in relation to Shambhala and in connection with all the service rendered in the three worlds. There are so many possibilities for which is the master best suited, and what is he divinely intended to do, because that is within his monadic being, the direction, the intention of what he will carry out in the lower worlds. This principle of decision, interestingly, it is based on the energy of the second ray of love wisdom, just as the principle of conflict is based on the energy of the third ray of active intelligence. Well, this is interesting. The principle of decision of conflict combines a root in ray 3 and a working out in ray 4. And the principle of decision, that's path of discipleship again. Principle of decision combines a root in ray 2 and a working out in what? Ray 1? Okay, let's see. This principle of decision as a controlling factor is put to the test at the sixth initiation. Well, yes, this is what seemed obvious and which I was describing a little while ago, the initiation of decision. At this time, the will aspect of divinity, so it is working out as the first ray. The principle of decision works out as a expression of the first ray. At that time, the will aspect of divinity summarizes in a unique manner all past achievements of the two principles and brings in a final cycle of unfoldment to which I can give no truly appropriate name, but which climaxes in the initiation of refusal. So we have a final principle of X, and no name is given. But when you make a decision, you know, you have to cut one thing from another. And you know, under the principle of limitation, you cannot go in all directions simultaneously, even though your essential being is everywhere. So in the world of the universe, you have to choose a particular direction, and the monad and its awareness, its inherent knowledge, is the source of indicating that direction. You have, therefore, in relation to these principles, which are all related to the law of karma, so the principle of conflict, principle of decision, and principle of X, principle of conflict, and the principle of decision, and the principle of X, Pax, are all related to the law of karma. Three great initiations at which the effectiveness of the liberation brought about by their inherent action is finally tested. So and this is, as we might expect it, at the initiation of renunciation, the fourth initiation, the principle of conflict governed by Ray 4 and active in the human kingdom, the fourth, and it leads to right discrimination. There is a revelation at the fifth degree regarding the divine purpose, and one's role within it. The initiation of decision occurs at the sixth degree. The principle of decision is there. It's governed by Ray 3. You know, there's a deep, inherent intelligence regarding the direction which the monad must take. This is active in hierarchy. It leads to right perception regarding one of the ways of higher evolution. So how will we participate there? And RGDG. So we'll call that RGDG regarding. And what would he call the final one? There is this principle of refusal. Well, I guess he calls it by a name, which he said he really wouldn't do before, but he calls this final principle by a name, the principle of refusal. And it's the principle of liberated being. Liberated from what? Liberated from the cosmic physical plane. It's governed by all three major rays. The three major rays govern the ninth initiation. It is active in Shambhala, so it does not apply to all. Some have moved on the way of higher evolution to other destinations. And it leads to one or other of the seven paths and what we would call now the nine paths, although he does not describe what those other paths might be, but as I said, you know, I think they lead to the crown jewel of the seven major Pleiades. And there are also the parents of the Pleiades, the star Atlas, the star Pleione, which would make the nine. So somehow all these paths, whatever other great constellations they lead to, lead eventually to the Pleiades and to the, what we call at least, the central core of the Pleiades, in which there are seven stars, or maybe we can consider them nine stars, since the nine is such an important number with respect to the third ray function of the Pleiades. In all the above tabulation, you have a wide and general picture of three major principles leading to three great spiritual events, each of which is an expression of the personality, the soul, and the monad. All three, but expressing one in greater power, perhaps. Where humanity as a whole is involved, the effect upon the reincarnating soul of the human kingdom, then on the liberated souls of the members of the hierarchy, and finally on the being which is distinctive of the council at Shambhala. The effect is upon the reincarnating soul of the human kingdom. So let's just say we have here initiations 4, 6, and 9, and various degrees of liberation. In 4 is liberation. LIB, shall we make that liberation? You can become my collaborator here. 4 would be liberation from the causal body. Causal body, please. Thank you. And 6, liberation from the 5 cosmic subplanes of Brahma. And 9 would be, 9 is liberation from the entire cosmic physical plane. Each one of these would be seen as a limitation from a certain perspective. A planned synthesis thus appears, producing immutability, inevitability, and correct prevision, if we do it correctly, or see and decide correctly. It is also the result of the liberation of free will, especially experienced at the higher initiations, where there is complete freedom to choose, and in no way infringes the right of the individual man or disciple to make free choice, once the principle of conflict has made him aware of the basic dualism of the manifested worlds, spirit and matter. So conflict clarifies the pairs of opposites. This presents him with a battleground and a field of experience wherein he makes great experimental choices. We say, on the way to a more final choice, and comes eventually to correct orientation and to the door of initiation, progressively revealed to him as the result of right choice, right perception, right decision. These are the higher initiations. Thus, the nine initiations are covered. So he's coming eventually to correct orientation and to the door of initiation as it is progressively revealed to him because of, along the way, choosing correctly, perceiving correctly, and deciding correctly. Well, all of this type of free choice lies ahead of us. We are very much constrained now by the principle of conflict. We are now much constrained by the principle of conflict, which will become revelatory and lead us to the principle of decision and finally to the principle of refusal. So, I think here that this is the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 81. And as usual, I guess I've lost my way. Page 606 to what? Uh, 610. Covering a bit more. Page 606 to 610. And our day here is the 4th of March 2017. And then we will continue beginning Rays and Initiations webinar commentary number 82, and beginning with page 610. 606 to 610, and well, we've covered some very deep things. If I tried to review this at the beginning of the next discussion, I'd almost have to take the whole chapter in review. Well, certainly, I'm sure we find these thoughts mind-expanding, and in no way would we have such a vision of possibilities except to read the hierarchically sanctioned work of Master DK, who was given permission by hierarchy, his master, the Christ, and Sanat Kumara, to carry this teaching forward. So let's just say in general, remember the principle of conflict, the principle of decision, and the principle of refusal. Well, I probably won't use that very much, but I will at least put it in for the sake of some symmetry here, and we'll call it here the principle of refusal. How shall we make ourselves equal to the understanding of these things by following the rules which apply to the stage in which we find ourselves? And for most of us, it's to achieve a true control over the emotional body, to achieve some spiritual intelligence, mental illumination, and eventually a growing sense of unity regarding the relationship of all things that we perceive. Okay, then, on to number 82 next time, and thank you for thinking along with me. That's what it is. It's kind of a study group. We're thinking together about these things, and you will come up with your own ideas in this regard and not necessarily agree with all that I say. I'm not even sure I agree with all I say. But at one's present level of ignorance, one does what one can. Okay. See you a little bit later. Bye-bye.